Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And I'm Chef Cindy Wolf. Uh-oh.
Are you now?
Uh-oh.
Clearly, we're live today.
I don't know who I am today. Please explain who you are today. Yes, last night was Saturday. And
maybe
frankly,
you need a Snickers bar.
We had some fun last night at the restaurant, so I'm ready to just relax right now.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, you are listening to us live. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us if you like, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And the topic today is what makes a great restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their opinions about great restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
The Michelin Guide will tell you it's based upon how far you're willing to drive to go and eat in some restaurant.
I love that.
And they'll say it's all based upon the food.
It is.
But I've never walked into a 3-star Michelin restaurant and didn't think I went into another planet as far as the interior of the place.
Oh, well, we know it's...
So what...
And we know with Michelin, it's also not just based on the food. They have to... Their interior has to be up to speed. Their, you know, everything, even down to the linens and the bathroom and the ice cubes and all that stuff.
Yeah, the ice cube measurement.
Yeah, that's a little scary when it comes down to ice cubes.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. I'm not... Personally, I'm not really prepared to have my ice cubes measured.
Me either. I just like them to be ice cubes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their job is to be cold.
Mm-hmm. So great restaurants. So, I can't wait to hear what people say.
Well,
I want to know what they
eat. And sometimes, you know, it's based on culture. I mean, we're coming from a place.
Absolutely.
We have a uniquely American perspective on the things that we take in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're from the Mid-Atlantic. I mean, what do we have the same feelings about a restaurant in Savannah, Georgia, or in New Orleans, or in Fort Worth, Texas, or in Minneapolis? God bless them in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the West Coast. You know what? Does it matter what the context is around the place? Does it feel somehow appropriate to you for being in that place or not? You know,
mm-hmm.
If you went to a great, I mean, there's a Lebanese restaurant that I like very much in Paris.
Yes.
Which is not the first thing that everyone thinks of when they are going to go to Paris. But
being one of the most amazing cities in the world, they have pretty much everything to offer.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
But... I mean, I think it's a
What's
great
What's the
restaurant.
Interior like in the Lebanese restaurant in Paris?
Very posh.
Really?
I have a memory of it being exceedingly warm inside, not just the colors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was 80 degrees the entire time.
Okay, well, I would have had to have left.
Yeah, that's not...
That does not make a great restaurant for me. I can't stand to be hot, which is ironic, considering what I do for my living. But
yeah,
you would like it to be 60 degrees. Yeah, I would like
it
to be 60 degrees everywhere inside. Outside, 32 is good.
But how you feel about being in the space, how you feel about you in the space.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever walked into a space and you were excited to go to the place and you walked in and you realized you did not remotely prepare yourself in your own appearance for walking into that space?
Yeah, that's definitely.
And did you care?
Well, see, I know you're not.
Is that the restaurant's fault that you didn't dress the way that you...
Right.
Wish you
that
had
you
when
would
you
feel
went to
comfortable.
A place.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's hard nowadays too, because you know it always used to be that in a fine dining restaurant, gentlemen had to wear jackets or even ties, and you know which then therefore meant the ladies had to dress up. And you know our culture has changed so much; people dress more casually, and that's not comfortable for people as it used to be. And yet, there are people that feel that that's still absolutely necessary. So we're kind of in a flux with the whole dress code right now in restaurants, because there are a couple of different generations out there that have very different opinions about what should be worn in a fine dining restaurant,
which is understandable. It's not hard. Just generational. I mean, and you can call us and chime in if you like about anything that makes up a great restaurant or detracts from it. And maybe the dress code is part of that for you. 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And I mean, I know for me, I feel differently about that. When I grew up, I worked in places where it was black tie or, you know, black tie, but Eton jackets and that kind of thing. And all of the guests always wore a necktie and dresses and all that sort of business.
Mm-hmm.
I have probably more democratic feelings about the way a room should be and the way the room should feel, the way people should be addressed. I mean, I mean, maybe in producing a restaurant, I have some movie in my head mm-hmm. and wish everyone was dressed for that movie set.
That would be cool.
But as a guest walking in, I would like to feel good in what I've chosen to wear for that day.
Absolutely.
For whatever other purpose besides just eating in that restaurant.
All right. What if you're traveling? What if you've been working all day? What if, you know, there's so many what ifs about what you have on, so it shouldn't really matter what you have on.
And the restaurant's job is just to restore you, right?
Exactly. That's what a restaurant is. To restore. Exactly. You know, one of the other things too, you know, you were talking about how you feel and how you should feel when you walk into a restaurant. I'll never forget when I first started working for a restaurant company in D.C. when I moved up from Charleston, South Carolina. And and these guys had 18 restaurants. And I had never worked in a situation where people had a real philosophy about every single aspect of it. I mean, obviously, 18 restaurants, these people were very, very good at what they did. And I remember talking to one of the VPs of the company, and he said, well, I said, why are the lights pink in here? And he said, because it makes women look the best they can possibly be, you know, and it's that tone, that pink lighting tone. And I had never heard anybody talk like that about a restaurant before. And I'm like, wow.
That's so weird and sexist. I've never heard you say that out loud before.
Well, I didn't. It wasn't my idea.
Does it help how all humans look or?
Oh, well, yeah. Anyway, yes. But I just had never heard anybody talk about their interior with that sort of thought process before. So I was just kind of surprised by it and realized how in-depth they think about every aspect of, as do we, except for, you know, something so specific as that. So should we go to a caller, Tony?
Yeah, let's go to a caller. Al in Baltimore. Go ahead, Al.
Hey,
hi, Al.
Hey, my friend. I think what makes a good restaurant for me was the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the atmosphere?
Well, you felt like very relaxed. Mm-hmm. You felt like they welcomed you in there to begin with, and you walked in the door.
Sure.
And the way the people treated you when you walked in the door, helped you get seated, it was just wonderful.
Did they actually want you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a restaurant. Can I mention the name?
Sure.
There was a restaurant in Baltimore. It closed a while back called Ding Hao. Mm-hmm. And I walked in there, and my godson took me. And I walked in that place, and I felt, this is it. The tables were nice. They weren't just a bare table. They were tablecloths, linen napkins, comfortable chairs, quiet atmosphere. Music was playing, very quiet music in the background. It was simply fantastic.
So was it great as your regular place, or was this great as in, it's a huge occasion, I'm going to go here?
Well, it was regular whenever we went there, and it was a special occasion. I wouldn't say no.
That's very good. That's nice.
That's a lot of affection.
That's
thanks,
great.
Al. Thanks
that's
for the call.
Cool. Thank you, Al. Have
okay,
a happy Sunday.
Gotcha.
Very nice.
Valerie, why don't you go ahead? Valerie in Bel Air.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi, good morning. Nice to talk to you guys again. Exactly what the former caller just mentioned. Ambiance to me is really important. Of course, food is extremely important. The presentation, the knowledge, the knowledgeable waiters. I love it when a server offers this dialogue. It almost sounds like an acting script that they're reading. It's fun to see their enthusiasm and their promotion of meals and their knowledge of the presentation and the preparation of a meal. But the ambiance and the noise level is important to me too.
How much is the right noise level for you?
Well,
people don't like to walk into a rock concert so much, and they don't like to walk into silence, right? So,
right. Well, usually it's the conversation level that is. And especially if you're placed next to the kitchen door that's swinging open and you hear all the noise of the kitchen, isn't that good also? But I think some of that has to do with the design of the restaurant and the sound absorption that is in the, I know it's hard to have carpeting, but maybe in the paneled walls or whatever. It's just noise level, really, because you can't have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, everyone definitely has feelings about noise level. It's funny. Cindy was making faces that you can't see on the radio when you're talking about noise out of the kitchen because historically I've been known to make my point very clear in the kitchen.
Yes.
On a repeated basis.
Yeah, when he calls for runner, it can be quite loud.
It's purely out of respect for the diners and the need for the food to get to
That's
the diner
true.
Immediately.
It's true. There's a purpose.
But yeah, I know that I've interrupted the conversation flow in the past.
Right.
And well, I apologize to everyone that's had to listen to it.
I'm not financially capable of going to really fine restaurants all the time. I would rather go once a year to a really fine restaurant like Cigali's and really, really enjoy it than to go to some other restaurant. But anyway, the ambiance and the welcoming and the calm atmosphere is really important.
Sure.
That's
great. I understand. Very good. Thanks
Valerie.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah. No, Cindy, on the other hand, her kitchen is always silent.
It is.
Her folks are silent.
Yeah.
She keeps it calm and serene when she's up there.
Well, that's the only way to really do your best work is you have to have total concentration in the kitchen. And if you were feeding, 60 people at one time or 75 people at one time, it takes a tremendous amount of, why are you looking at me like that? Oh, if only we had a monitor in this radio station. No, but I mean, it takes a tremendous amount of concentration to do excellent work. And it's not that I say you can't speak, it's not like that. It's just simply a matter of concentration and obviously even logistics. I mean, if somebody were talking, you can't talk while someone's expediting. I mean, no one can hear. So it's just
communication is very, very important to make things happen correctly in restaurants.
It is. And one of the biggest things about, working in a kitchen and particularly during service is discipline. It's all about discipline. It's about all the things that it takes to be an excellent cook. And that's one of the things, is absolute concentration.
So what makes a great restaurant for you? Is it the cooking? Is it what's in the wine cellar? I mean,
it is absolutely both of those things. It's the cooking and the wine. For me,
is it the quality of welcome? No, I'm asking
or,
listeners.
Oh, sorry.
Because we're going to break in a minute.
Okay.
I want them to think about it, and I want them to call us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org and give us your opinions. It's a lot of times we can be single-minded in what we do. We have an idea in mind about how something should be, but it's always interesting to hear what's important to people. What are the things that help you make decisions on where you're going to dine?
Yeah, I would love to hear from everyone. It'd be great.
So when we come back, more talk about what makes a restaurant great. And at some point, Cindy's going to suffer through a chef challenge. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We're live today. We're talking about what makes restaurants great restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach us, share opinions or your thoughts or what's important about that. 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And why don't we go to the first caller, Kayla. Kayla, go ahead.
Hi, Kayla.
Hi there. So I just wanted to make a comment adding on to atmosphere, but also just there's kind of this triangle of like atmosphere, genuinity of the staff and food that I feel need to have like a exact balance and atmosphere, like lighting, like you guys are saying, it's kind of like all of these things. And people are shouting out restaurants. So I just want to say which place I feel like is really great at this in Baltimore, Mount Vernon, Nepal House. It's a fine Nepalese cuisine, and they just really have all that going for them, and I think it's a great example.
That's great. I like your thought of that. There is a sort of a triumvirate of the environment, the quality of welcome, and the food. I don't disagree with you.
Thanks, Kayla.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
A couple of quick messages from right here in Charles Village from Leslie. Bread. You got to have great bread or you're not a great restaurant.
Definitely.
So let's go ahead with David in Hunt Valley. David, go ahead.
Hi, David.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Love your show. Been a fan of your food for a long time.
Thank you.
And I've been involved in developing and maintaining restaurant concepts pretty much my whole career. And I just have to chime in and applaud you guys and, you know, the Baltimore food culture in general for embracing, you know, the thoroughness that a restaurateur has to address all these issues. And I think it gets kind of lost by the consumer sometimes. You know, you have to be a lighting technician. You have to be a super PR person and instill those values and that core culture in your staff. Things about design work, where the coat room's placed, where items are left unattended, or, you know, and of course the food and the wine are the primary reason why people are coming. But, you know, we do want to restore, as restaurant means, restore, you know, a calm and a pleasant kind of feeling to our guests. So, yeah, you guys do a great job, and, you know, the job is never done. You know, you can never overthink your guest's experience.
It's true.
It's never done. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for good work.
Thank you.
So Dave reminds me of every mistake that I've ever made in designing restaurant spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that piece of equipment that I kind of dreamt up that never worked out. It just only got repair bills.
Right.
Like that one damn freezer.
Ooh, yes.
Or
yeah, that one.
Oh, geez. Or you have the one restaurant that doesn't have enough
room
in the dish machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next one, you build it oversized and it's more than you need.
Yes.
So you have a dishwasher that can read the newspaper all day long. it's just like, my goodness.
That's never-ending learning process, for sure.
And the light fixtures, and the light fixtures, and the light fixtures.
Right, okay.
Let's go to Rob and Frederick. Rob, go ahead.
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, there's Bob. It's good to visit with you. I want to agree with what folks have said about hospitality and all the things you brought up. But for me, the location makes such a significant difference. And when I say location, it's not ease of location. It's more where its setting is, on a cliffside, overlooking the ocean,
mm-hmm.
overlooking a lake. One perfect example is last fall, I was in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and someone said, check out Salt, which is nestled in the park south of Minneapolis, seafood. And the setting was so great, the food was so great, I kid you not, I had to go back 3 times in 2 days.
Oh,
that's awesome.
That's wonderful.
I could not get enough.
Oh,
that's a restaurant that's doing its job.
Oh, yeah. That's a great feeling. Oh, that's nice to hear. Cool.
Well,
thanks,
Bob. Thank you for your program.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, Bob. Yeah, that's...
The funny thing is there are times when there are destination settings that don't work either year-round. You know, like if you're operating the business, sometimes you can have a fantastic setting that only works part of the year.
Yeah.
And you got to figure out how to pay people the rest of the year.
Yeah. That's
you know,
true.
That,
yeah. Seasonal settings are just hard on hard restaurants to operate. Yeah. One of my favorites, when he started saying that, it just made me think of Cogne and how beautiful it is there. And I think that's one of my, in Northern Italy. And I think it's at the base of Mont Blanc, and there's the last hotel in the valley, and you can sit in the restaurant, you can see the mountains from these just beautiful peaks and this beautiful valley floor and sit there and have, you know, cured meats and raclette and local fingerling potatoes and all kinds of amazing pasta dishes. And it's old fashioned and it has all this old, you know, like ski equipment on the walls and the floors
I mean, that's
are
exactly
old, rickety.
The right dish at the right time in the right place with the right view, right?
Absolutely. I love that restaurant.
Well, in March when the weather is just kind of lousy, and that to the point that I made previously, God, I hope they do well when it's ski season and in high summer.
Yeah.
Because their spring and their autumn probably have to be pretty difficult.
Oh, I'm sure
it's just rainy in that part.
Well, and it's
of Italy.
Also difficult to get to Cogne. It's the name of the hotel, by the way, is called Bellevue, and the restaurant. Do you remember? Is it Fromagerie, Tony? Do you remember the name of the restaurant?
Yeah,
Fromagerie. Yeah, it's great. Their raclette is so good. Mountain cheese.
Let's go to Don in Timonium.
Hi, Don.
Don, why don't you go ahead? Oh, Don's not there.
Okay. Should we go to Rob?
We already talked
to Rob, who is Bob, actually.
Yeah, we have Don's comment. The main purpose of going out is enjoying company. So noise and music level is second only to food.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, sure.
There are definitely people that feel that way. I know that for me, I was trying to think, what are my big deciders? of course you want to feel welcome. Like you, I have a short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I want things to happen quickly.
Right. Yeah. No, we both, yeah, like things to happen quickly.
How bad am I if I'm sitting for a while and I don't have a glass of wine?
Oh, it's ugly. Honestly, it's ugly.
It just gets worse, right?
Yes, it does.
And it doesn't
and
mean...
And it's not that you need it.
I can't consume that much
that
wine. I take a lot of medication. But I would like it. One of the one of the things that is being restored is my morale. And at that point of the day, at which
exactly.
I can have...
exactly.
I'm being very honest.
No, it's true.
That point of the day that I can have a glass
mm-hmm.
of wine,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I can choose from things that I would like to drink.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I would like it to happen.
Oh, believe me, I will never forget one of our dining experiences. We were in a very nice restaurant somewhere, and I recall I was dreading the whole it taking too long thing with you. And then the real whammy, and everybody, this happens, it happens to us too, but the real whammy was they didn't have the wine you wanted. And I almost started to cry at the table because I'm like, oh, this is just going to get worse and worse all the time. So, yes. Yeah, the whole wine that... And then the wine that we got was corked and the somm didn't recognize it. And I'm like, okay, I think maybe I should just go back to the room now because this is going to just go downhill in flames. But, yeah, we all have our things that we expect.
Yeah, on a trip in Bordeaux, and I know that I have been imperfect... with our guests who've been very patient with me over time.
Sure. No, we are imperfect.
But
I'm not...
On a recent trip in Bordeaux, I'd ordered a couple of nice bottles of wine, very interesting ones, to taste with lunch with the several staff that
sure.
were on that trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to have the experience of tasting those wines and being able to compare them and discuss them. And it's one of the things that we do in training staff. And waited for things to come. One of the wines was... pretty clearly corked. And the server then took the wine. I apologize. It was not in Bordeaux. It was in Burgundy. And it was in the village of Maurice-Saint-Denis. The guy brought the wine to the owner, who did not come to the table, who was like, well, I'll bring it to the owner and let him know that you think that it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took it to him and... he came back with a message from the owner that it was right.
Oh. Okay. So we can't do that.
At which point I said then he should drink it.
I'm so glad I wasn't there.
Yeah, it was
I'm so glad I wasn't there for that.
It was a little disturbing.
I'm sure it was.
And
well,
it wasn't
and you deserve to be disturbed. I mean, we always say the guest is right, no matter what. Period.
But it wasn't
story.
About being and, right.
But I mean we of course we want the guest to have whatever they want. If you don't like it, you shouldn't have it. We'll get you something better.
Exactly.
Something different.
That's our job.
Our job is to make the guest happy. So yeah, and not judge them.
Recently I'd had someone say that because I was on the other side of that, I guess that something had been under a heat lamp for a period of time. Since I was the person that actually took the food from the kitchen, I watched it prepared go from the pan to the window to in front of the guest.
Yes.
And then for the guest to say it had been under a heat lamp,
mm-hmm.
I didn't think was fair.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell me you don't like it. You can tell me that you didn't think it was executed correctly, and we'll absolutely do whatever we can to make something that you like.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
anyway,
mm-hmm.
let's go to Ray in Baltimore. Ray, go ahead.
Hi, Ray.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan of both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
I wanted to say that it's really important to me. I think I am a bartender, actually. I think service is really important in any restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's something that maybe you haven't touched on quite as much, and it's a huge part of the experience. And we always talk about going out as a dining experience, and the server or bartender is the facilitator of that. And I'm a strong believer that when you go out, it's not what you eat or what you did or who you talked to, but how they made you feel. So I think that's really important to the dining experience.
I agree with you completely, Ray. One of the things that we'll often, I try to teach staff when they get started with us is that maybe not every guest is an expert on food, and maybe not every guest is an expert on wine, but I don't know anyone who's not expert on how they'd like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And figuring that out is one of the hardest, if not the hardest thing to do. from a million different signals and people from all different backgrounds and all different perspectives.
But it's one of the most important things a server does, right?
The most important things that, mm-hmm. that service people do, and probably the most challenging thing that we do.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Figuring that out is the struggle of my life, as they say.
Reading people's minds.
So what do you
love it. That's why we do it, right?
Yep, oh definitely.
What is the thing that you feel like is the tell that always gets you in the right spot with a guest? And what is the thing that always throws you off?
The tell that gets me in the right spot, what's going on with them.
Yes.
Like exactly.
If they're on lately I've been seeing a lot of first dates with Tinder and all that stuff. So I think that's a pretty easy situation to read. They're not super comfortable with each other. They're asking these kind of get-to-know-you questions. So I can read that situation. It's like, okay, they need some space. And then
it's like watching Netflix at your bar.
Situations that are hard to read, that depends. When people are not necessarily having a good time, maybe they don't want your bubbliness. Maybe they want some space as well. Maybe they want you to kind of alleviate that stress. But reading the guest is a really tough thing to do for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
We've got a couple of emails to dig into here.
Good.
From Bobby in Baltimore, I agree about noise level being important to an experience. I'm curious, when can a restaurateur actually do to control this? If it's too loud in the room because of tin ceilings or guest loudness, or if it's too quiet because everyone is being too courteous, what can you actually do to correct that?
Okay, Tony, that one's yours. Okay, well, I will tell you, I think one of the things, we can only do with our spaces, we have a restaurant that's a little lively.
We have a number of restaurants that can be lively, and the spaces are designed so that there is some feeling or some vibe in the space, and a little bit less if the place is more formal, but you still don't want something to feel like there's no activity.
Mm-hmm.
What I find interesting is that the guest at 6 o'clock, when no one's really had much of anything to drink, usually has less comments about the noise level than at 8 o'clock when the large majority of the guests have had a couple of drinks. I think there's a surge in the crowd's performance, let's say, and their own volume level. That makes a difference. It's part of what makes it exciting, too, to walk into a place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going on a cold night, it's dark, and you go into a place that's warmly lit, and there's a, you know, there's a surge of humanity, you know, all relaxing, enjoying themselves, and most people, I think, find that hard not to be washed away in. But it's tricky.
It's
definitely tricky. And interior designers and architects have, God love you, and we've pleasantly employed a number of you. We really have to figure out for ourselves how to control the sound, because in the visual design process and in space planning process, that's not something that's really undertaken very much. And even trying to use sound engineers before, it's not worked as well as just doing it based on some common sense and how people behave
and it's also,
what they're going to do.
It's also all about, that particular restaurant. It's concept, and you can't always load up the restaurant with a bunch of curtains and put wall-to-wall carpeting in and do all the things that would really deaden sound. They're just concepts that kind of thought press isn't going to work. So you do the best you can and, come up with other solutions.
Yeah,
but
sound control is a dynamic experience in a particular space.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but that is an interesting...
Yes, it's a good question.
Question
good
for sure.
Thing to talk about.
We have one from Frank in Fells. My favorite experience is less than perfectly appointed dining room. My favorite is when I feel like I'm in someone's home. There are some amazing Mexican restaurants in Baltimore where you feel like you're a guest in the family's house. This comes with all the warmth of being a guest of the family, and also all the noise and smells and love and character of being in someone's home. The love that makes the food taste even better. So,
yeah.
That's really warm and charming, Frank.
Amazing. That's lovely. Thank you.
So, you tell me, What is the most shocking thing when you walked into a restaurant that in the interior and the presentation of things, what's the thing that was most surprising to you that you can recall?
In the interior?
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know.
Either positively or negatively.
Oh, well, one of the most positive things, and I probably talked about it more than once on the radio, is the restaurant, my favorite restaurant in Paris, well, one of my favorite restaurants in Paris, that the ceiling opens. And I mean, I never, you know, you're sitting there having dinner and you don't know what's going to happen the first time you're there. And when you and I went there the first time was many, many years ago. And it was when people could still smoke in Paris. And it was full by the time we'd been eating. It was
everyone still smoked
yeah,
in Paris.
Yeah, and it was full of smoke. And this restaurant at that time did a lot of tableside still. This was 24 years ago, 25 years ago.
So there were cigars, cigarette smoke, cooking smells in the air.
Yeah, everything. And it was wintertime. Oh, no, it wasn't either. It was August. And they just, they opened that huge ceiling. It just starts rumbling quietly, opening. And all that cooking stuff and all that smoke just wafted up into the sky. And this wonderful, cool air came in. And it was one of the most amazing things from both a visual standpoint, because now all of a sudden you could see the sky and the stars and the moon, which is, I loved every moment of that, to the fact that you just felt so refreshed. And you know, this was a big meal. It was many courses and rich, you know, gorgeous food that you're just so involved in. And you know, there's music playing. They have a piano in this restaurant. Actually, I don't think they have that anymore. Yeah, it was just that. That was a very unexpected and special thing about that particular restaurant. So
I think you only liked it because it cooled the room off a lot. Let's go to Jim in Kingsville and catch one more call. Jim, go ahead.
Hello. I've got to talk about a place called Masala Twist. Speaking of ambiance and good food.
Is this an Indian dance place?
Beautiful inside. It's so warm and inviting. It's on Pulaski Highway. I think that's his problem, 9611. He's not doing well, and he's got wonderful food. I had a tandoori chicken the other day, which was superb. I've been cooking Indian in my own home for 30 years, so I kind of know. And I feel so bad that he's struggling. What can I say? When I go in there, I feel at home. I feel the warm colors on the walls, the tapestries that he has hanging, and he runs the place practically alone. Aside from his cook in the back, but I just wish that I just like to give him some exposure called Masala Twist.
It sounds like a special experience, Jim. What's the single best dish if someone goes there?
Oh, you know, I've only been there twice. I don't know.
You're gonna have to keep going and report back.
Yes.
Oh, the tandoori chicken was wonderful. It was served on a beautiful bed of rice with. Vegetables that had been run under the broiler. It was wonderful.
Good.
That's great.
That's nice. Well,
thanks,
thank
Jim.
You. That's very kind of you.
Yes.
Thanks
you,
for
sir.
The call.
Bye.
And so we're live today on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. You can reach us 410-662-8780. The general topic is what makes a restaurant a great restaurant? And in the last segment, I want to get to, I have a theory about a lot of times a restaurant's built on one dish. There's one dish that is like the heartbreaker, that is the thing that always brings people in. There's one particular soup. There's one particular way that they cook fish. There's one particular something that moves you that you can't go without, and that's why that restaurant is great and exists, right? So give us your opinions, your thoughts. We'll see if we can sneak a little chef's challenge in here. 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we are live. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And you're welcome to chime in about the topic is what makes a restaurant a great restaurant. Does it inherently have to be fancy? Does it mean tablecloths? Can it be very modest? If a place calls itself a bar, can it also happen to be a great restaurant? Does that mean it has to have, the chef have to be the owner? You know, like we'd like to know what your thoughts are. There's so many different situations, and one of my theories, and I said it to before we finished the last segment, Cindy, can you think of a restaurant that there was one dish that you're like, you know, this place may not be perfect, but this one thing, this makes this a great place, and I have no choice but to go there again.
There are definitely probably many places that I can think of that, you know, when you said it, it's always that, you're driven by that need for that one dish that you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm craving it. It's so amazing. And for me, it's actually the restaurant that I was talking about before. They have
La Serre.
Yeah, La Serre. It has a macaroni dish that has the pasta is stuffed with foie gras, and it's sort of a miracle how they make the dish. It's an amazing piece of artwork, and it has some truffles on it, and they do a slice of truffle, and they cut them into perfect little circles, and the sauce has truffle in it, and it has it's really actually a Reggiano cream that also paints the plate, and all the components of that dish. I wish I could have it right now, and it's just so.
You're clearly having deep personal feelings about this dish.
So yes,
but
I mean
people do.
Yeah, and it can be something like I miss some barbecue that I used to have when I was a kid. And, you know, it can be something very, very simple, but it's like my mother's cooking. I mean, we all have these dishes from all aspects of life, whether it's someone, you know, in your family that's cooked for you. But, I mean, I think that's one of the also things that makes us get so, I know this is off topic, but get so excited about the holidays is because we just look forward to these particular dishes. So, of course, restaurants do that for us as well.
Yeah, there's a small restaurant in the south of Sicily, literally further south in Sicily than the northernmost point of Africa.
Wow.
Near a winery. The winery's name is Costa, and I can't recall the name of the place. A little place. It was essentially a house with a big kitchen in it.
Mm.
And the caponata, I mean, simplest, like most classic peasant dish, but so, spectacular.
Yeah.
Just spectacular.
Mm.
And I know that they put honey in the caponata.
Oh, wow. And yum.
Like, and huh. I don't care that I'm cheating on the sugar content. You know, it's like, okay, I don't.
Caponata is a labor of love. It's a little bit like making ratatouille, too. I mean, these are dishes.
Well, there are also a million different versions of executing it and combining ingredients. It's essentially an eggplant dish that's long, slow roasted or slow cooked in a pot or all but melted over a fire and then scraped up the next day. I mean, there's a bunch of different versions of it.
Yeah, it makes me want to work with eggplant. Yum.
Your old eggplant caviar was not so bad.
That dish is one of, it's just so much fun to make, too.
So I've got an email here from Isabel. I apologize if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. Apart from the quality of the food, the job that the waiter/waitress does is so important. My pet peeve is being served the main course while I'm still eating the first course. It happens a lot here. I'm a Brit living here and have also lived in France. It makes me really angry. Don't be so angry, Isabel. Also, being rushed through a meal with no time between courses, unless you've already made it clear that you're in a hurry.
Right.
The server is so important contributing to the experience. It is good to have a knowledgeable server, but I'm not personally keen on someone who turns it into a grand performance, unless that kind of performance was part of the character of the restaurant and I knew in advance. Service can also be overly intrusive and keep interrupting the flow of conversation at the table. I know it's a tough job, and I've often done it in the past. I think some restaurants just don't train their servers well enough. Love eating out, though. Isabel.
Okay.
So, you're pretty thorough, Isabel. I'm with you on, it's funny, because I'm with you on a couple of the things. I don't love a grand performance, but I do love someone who's enthusiastic and informed, I will admit. And there are people, there are definitely guests who want your grand performance, that someone being a bit of a character, a big person. I mean, people respond differently to different kinds of people in different situations is one of the cool things. What we were talking about earlier with, I think it was Dave, reading people and figuring out which one of you is wanted in a given situation. That's really one of the hardest and most rewarding things to figure out.
Well, and
for service,
you know,
people.
And also, I mean, I guess it would be easier too if the guest said something. You know, I don't need a big explanation every time, or I don't know. I mean, it's not the guest's job to tell us how to do the service. I mean, it is our job to figure out those cues and tells, as you called them.
Yeah.
For sure. But, you know, if you don't want to hear it, just tell us, you know. I don't know. It's interesting.
But some people don't want to have to explain that they don't want XYZ behavior. It is super interesting.
No, it's.
And in a culture where we're very focused on who we are and what we say about us, it's very hard to unteach that behavior and to make it really about, you know, receiving what is being given, not trying to take it from that guest. That's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. And it was not Dave. It was our good bartender, Ray.
Ray, okay.
Who had called in. Yeah. And I have for you the most lovely of chef's challenges.
Oh, we're doing a chef challenge?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Why not?
Yummy. Whole Millard duck, pomegranate, grapefruit, endive, hazelnuts, white beans, garlic, onion, celery, mascarpone, preserved apricots, farro, Italian, flatleaf parsley, basil, and cumin, farro.
I've given you no stock, by the way, so that's...
Okay, so I'll
consider yourself gifted... A liter of mushroom stock.
Oh, okay. All right. So with the white beans, they need to soak for a while, and I'll just wash them very, very well, because sometimes beans can be a little bit dirty. So wash them several times in cold water, then let them sit for a little while I prepare the stock, which I will use the garlic and the onions to make a vegetable stock for that. I will put a little bit of the cumin you gave me in there, which will be really pretty. And let the white beans start to work. And no salt from the beginning, because you don't want to have salted water for beans. You want them to cook very slowly on low heat. And when I'm done with the beans, I'm going to garnish them with some of the hazelnuts. What I'll do is I'll roast them in the oven and crack them. And that will become a part of the white bean broth that I'm going to create for the whole duck. I'll roast the duck. I'm going to use a tiny bit of the cumin with a little bit of salt and pepper. I assume I have that. It's not on here. I have to have that, Tony. Thank you.
You may have salt and
pepper. Thank you. And then, so rub that into the whole duck. So Millard has a lot of fat. So I'm going to score the fat on the breast. And so little hash marks on the breast. Don't go down to the meat. Just sort of allows, what it does is it allows the some of the fat to be released, which means you really need to be on a rack so that fat can drop below the level of the duck.
So it doesn't actually fry in the oven.
Yeah, right. And then so I'll be, and so salt, pepper, and tiny bit of cumin. I don't want to go overboard. Cumin is an extremely intense spice, and but a little bit of that. And I'd like to put a little bit of the onions and celery in the cavity of the duck. You did not give me carrots. Okay. So the duck will roast in the oven. And then I'm going to make a salad I love pomegranate so much. It's so beautiful. And I just love the whole juicy aspect and how bright and fresh it is. So supremes of the grapefruit, the fresh pomegranate pieces, the endive. I'll also reserve a little bit of the hazelnuts for the salad. Okay, you've given me no oil. So I'm going to assume I have extra virgin olive oil. I'll hit it with a little
bit. What about the duck fat?
Oh, gross. No.
Yeah? You would never make a salad dressing with duck fat?
No. So, I would with duck stock. I would make a vinaigrette with duck stock, but I would not use the fat from the duck for a salad. And then what do I have left? I have the preserved apricot. Oh, well, I can put some of the preserved apricots on the salad too. That would be really nice. I'm ignoring your farro. So what I need to do is I need to cook the farro off in water with salt.
It's not the first time someone has ignored my farro.
I'm sure. So I've never, ever worked with farro. So I'm just being, you know, I'm a very honest person. So I don't really know that much about it. I know we use it in some of our places. I do love it, though. I've tasted it. And so I would just cook it off in salted water and let that be a part of the duck dish. And actually, I'm going to serve the duck on that salad. Yeah. And then the Italian flatleaf parsley, a little bit of fresh on top of everything, and a little bit of fresh basil on that salad. Actually, no. Okay. So the salad's going to be its own thing. I'm going to serve the duck on the beans, and I'll serve the salad with the beans and the duck at the same time, which I don't normally do. But it'll be a family dinner, so we'll have it all on the table, and that will be nice. You know, it's another one of those sort of Middle Eastern thought processes that you would have lots of greens on the table and, you know, lots of dried fruit and things that are very sort of refreshing. And that makes a lot of sense with that duck, because the duck is very rich and fatty. Here you go.
Salad of all that bitter stuff would definitely beg. It's funny, I don't always think of Prosecco for anything other than aperitivo.
Okay.
But it's sparkling, it's a little bit sweet. It would be nice with that salad.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Let's see what sort of a mess you've given me here. Smoked ham hocks, buffalo tender. Yeah, because I stopped by the Safeway for a buffalo tender. Garlic, onion, shallot, carrot, royal trumpet mushrooms, brown veal stock, rosemary, juniper berries, red currants, parsnips, polenta, buttercream, sherry vinegar, walnut oil, spinach, escarole, collard greens. let's see. The veal stock I'm going to reinforce with trumpets. I'm going to grill those trumpets after giving them a little bit of marinade and garlic and steep them in the veal stock for a while, just part of that. Half of that I'm going to reserve to reduce and make a little bit of sauce for the buffalo tender. The smoked ham hocks will also go in that veal stock. I'm going to cook the collard greens in there with plenty of onion. And that should have a serious base note, the flavor of that, of the greens and that broth. In fact, I may chiffonade those greens and serve it almost like a soup.
Mm-hmm.
Polenta, you give me butter and cream to cook the polenta in, so that's pretty darn straightforward. Maybe use a little bit of the rosemary to season the polenta as it finishes. Just make a little bit of oil, or even just leach out a little bit of the oil from with the butter. What else do I have to play with? The buffalo tender, I mean, you want to grill it and serve with a little bit of that reduction. The sherry vinegar, I would use a little bit of the sherry vinegar to give a little bit of freshness, a little bit of zip to that reduction. What else? You give me spinach, escarole. I've already got my greens, and I think...
You have to use them.
I have to use them.
You have to use all the ingredients.
Oh, for goodness
sake. That's what a chef's challenge is, Tony.
Yeah, no, but what? It's not if you... It's... Oh, yeah.
Hey, didn't you give me, like, Oreo cookies one time?
I did. Hey, I hope that you enjoyed those
Let's
cookies.
Let's go.
The red currants and parsnips? No.
Oh, for goodness sake. You have to... All right.
No, spinach.
You're saved by the bell.
Yeah, I'm running out of time.
You're saved by the bell.
The spinach and escarole, I'm happy to do a wilted salad with the walnut oil and a little bit of the a little bit of the smoked ham hock business.
Mm-hmm.
There's no acid, though. I guess there's a sherry vinegar, but it's sweet. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. See, I wouldn't have gone shopping for the stuff that you gave me.
Well, that's not the idea.
It's supposed to be a mystery basket.
But
I definitely don't care.
Oh, boy. Well, so there we are.
Thanks for listening. You can listen to this or any one of our other programs on podcast. Go to the WIPR website, wipr.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page. And all of these charming programs can be found there. If you want to contact us via email, it's foremanwolf@wipr.org. To follow Cindy Wolf on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
Mine is The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.